Somebody randomly on Twitter was like, I want to see this movie every day for the rest of my life.
Welcome to Sincast, presented by CinemaSins.
All right, everybody, welcome to the Sincast. This is Chris Atkinson from CinemaSins, joined as always by the voice of CinemaSins, Jeremy Scott.
Yo.
And from Music Video Sins, Barrett Scher.
Hey.
Today we're going to be doing a mini-pod.
Panty-pod. Yeah, man.
Black Panther.
Yeah.
As of this recording, they were expecting this to do $200 million worth of business over the weekend.
In 4 days.
Yep. 4 days.
Yeah.
So, it is an interesting thing for me. It's fun to watch Twitter blow up on a movie.
Yeah.
And it's fun seeing a lot of people coming out and going, you know, like, finally, there's a, yeah, you know, there's a movie like this with a mainly all black cast and, you know, and that they're all superheroes and badasses. And
it's fun to see it blow up in a positive way for once, you know, where like everybody's saying, wow, this is really amazing. You know, people dressing up. We saw a couple of people dressing up for the movie when we went to see it. Did you see those people in like the African garb and everything, which I thought was really cool.
Yeah.
The costumes in this movie are crazy awesome.
Yeah.
They are.
All right, well, let's do general thoughts before we dive into spoilers. I loved it.
Mm-hmm.
I had a blast. It's got issues like most of these Marvel movies do. We'll dive into that. But in fact, when one of the issues pops up near the end, I actually turned to my friend and I went, man, I was really enjoying this movie because the whole time I was smiling. Mm-hmm. I was into it. And I realized something only because my buddy Jason told me is that if I'm really into a movie, I'll put my recline back and I'll lean forward and put my elbows on my knees like I'm trying to get closer to. I did it a few times during this movie, apparently. Really, really loved it.
Why did you like it?
Why did I like it? Well, the cast.
Yeah.
This is probably the best cast, I think, of any Marvel movie yet.
That's a good point.
They're great at casting. You know, Robert Downey Jr. is great as Tony Stark.
Mm-hmm.
But this is just a who's who of great actors. Mm. And they all kill it. Most importantly, Michael B. Jordan, who I think gives us the best Marvel villain to date.
He's the standout, too?
Yeah, absolutely. Mm. I wanted more of him. And I felt like both the way the script works and the way he plays that character, I cared about him.
Mm-hmm.
His motivations made sense to me. He went a little too far with his beliefs, but I cared about him. And mm-hmm. when was the last time we cared about a Marvel villain?
Spider-Man Homecoming was basically it.
Well, yeah. And even there, I don't think you cared. Michael Keaton's great in that movie. Mm-hmm. The villain is great, but I still don't think you have that empathy for him quite as much as you do in this movie.
No.
And so there are a lot of things I loved, but I think the cast is what did it for me because they were just acting their asses off.
This is the third time Michael B. Jordan has worked with Ryan Coogler.
He did
with Fruitvale Station and Creed.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's a good team, man.
They must like each other.
Yeah,
I think so. He is fucking jacked in this movie.
He really is.
He was jacked for Creed, but he's unbelievable.
I agree with you. The villain in this is one of the most well-written, understandable villains that mm-hmm. we've seen in a long time.
Mm-hmm.
Because, yeah, I mean, it's... Yeah, a lot of these times it's just, I don't know, man. They just, we understand, like, you know, Daniel Brühl and his whole thing, but, like, it just, whatever, we don't care as much for whatever reason. I mean, even though it's, like, his family dies but
we don't get that reveal until the very end of the movie.
Yeah.
So you can't really, like, kind of go along with them the whole time.
Right. And even, like, you know, who else would there be that's along these lines? Not many.
I mean, the only other, like, almost rememberable villain was Loki in the Marvel,
but
in the MCU.
Yeah, and even
he's great and memorable because he's funny.
Mm-hmm.
Not because we care about him or because Hiddleston is acting his ass off.
Right.
Well, and that's another instance where it's just like, you know, somebody who feels inferior, and so he becomes a villain because of the family dynamic he grew up with and everything. And I think the closest would be the Daniel Brühl character, but like, even, you know, like you said, you don't know it. In this one, you know, I mean, they kind of keep some things secret for a while to get that big reveal that they always want to get and everything. But I think you kind of know, you kind of have an inkling when that's what they're leading up to, even though they don't go right out and tell you, you know, you kind of know that's where it's going. So, yeah, I agree with you. The villain is amazing.
Yeah. And also another standout was the girl that played his sister.
Yeah.
Who's sort of this movie's Q. She uses the vibranium to create gadgets and stuff. The dynamic between her and Chadwick Boseman is exceptional.
Yeah.
There's if you've ever been around siblings that are close like this, it's almost a non-romantic flirting, if that makes any sense. There's a dynamic there, and that he just played it perfect. Mm-hmm. Like, you could tell that they love each other and they have each other's back. And it was a great bond. I think a lot of that credit goes to her. Mm-hmm. And I hadn't seen her in much. I looked her up on IMDb. Her name's Letitia something.
Letitia Wright, yeah.
And she's been in, I think, Black Mirror. And
yeah, she was in a great episode of this season's Black Mirror. I think it's called The Black Museum, but it's an episode about this guy who made all these inventions that, you know, fuck people's lives up and stuff like that, pretty much. And then there's like one, you know, because it's Black Mirror, there's one incredible reveal he keeps in that Black Museum.
She's going somewhere. She's going places.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, and at first, you know, when they introduce her character, I'm like, okay, she's the funny sister. Ha 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 ha. And then you find out that she's really important.
Yeah.
And like, and I immediately fell in love with her when she was like, oh, what are those? And she's pointing at the sandals he's wearing.
Yeah, that was awesome.
Yeah, we not only have her, we have three well-developed badass women in this.
Yep.
And you don't see that very often. Even in Wonder Woman, there's like one, and then there's a kind of a cast of supporting characters.
Yeah.
These are three major women characters who get, you know, who get to do a lot of stuff in this.
And they're badass in unique ways, too. Mm-hmm. It's not like they're all warriors, or they're all this, or they're all smart, or that kind of thing.
Yeah.
You've got Lupita Nyong'o, who's the spy that also is kind of badass, you know, and she's got some tricks up her sleeves and things like that. And then you've got Danae Gurira.
Yeah, no idea how.
I know her from The Walking Dead as Michonne.
Yeah.
And she was badass. She is badass. I guess she's still alive.
Well, she gets to be badass in this movie, not only physically and fighting, but just with some of the decisions she makes and some of the lines that she has. I can't say enough about how well the script is written in this movie. I think that everything good that we're going to talk about in this podcast starts and originates with just a really well-written movie.
Yeah, that's the place where it shines. There are some places where it doesn't, but one of the lines that she has is when she's having to wear the wig in the casino.
Yeah.
She's like, this fucking ridiculous thing. Yeah. Oh, I can't wait to get it off my head.
Yeah.
Speaking of the casino, you know, some of the issues I have with the movie is that we still get a lot of that Marvel cut to death action stuff. Mm-hmm. That first scene with Black Panther dropping out of the plane into the jungles of somewhere.
Yeah.
I don't know what the fuck happens that entire scene.
Nope.
Plus it's all black too.
It doesn't help.
It's all at night.
But they go to this casino, and it gets a little Mission Impossible-y because they've got these, you know, ear things. They can hear each other and talk to each other. They're trying to find somebody in this casino. And when the casino fight begins, it's still a little cut to hell. But then they do this quote-unquote one-shot thing,
right,
where Panther goes up to the second level and fights and then comes down to the main level, and the camera just basically follows him the whole time. And from that point all the way through that car chase that follows, I thought was just thrilling.
Yes. That's the best part of the movie for me, this whole sequence in Busan, of all places.
Yeah, exactly.
Did they take a train there?
Yeah, exactly. This was the best part of the whole movie for me. It was thrilling from the very beginning. Very much, and you tweeted about this, very much James Bondish and everything.
Yeah.
We also get a sort of an impromptu reunion between Gollum and Bilbo Baggins.
Yeah, that was a fun scene.
Yeah, yeah.
Andy Serkis, I like Andy Serkis.
Well, he's having a blast here, right? Yeah. Like, you can tell the actor himself is having fun, and it comes through in the performance. And yeah, it's one of the most fun things I've seen him in. Mm-hmm. Just the way he's kind of singing and cackling like a crazy person.
Yeah. Of course, he can't just play like a regular human with all of his limbs. Like, he's got a head.
Yeah.
You know, an arm missing.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. He might be excited to finally not playing a mocap. Like, I can finally show my face.
Yeah.
Seriously.
Yeah.
Well, and he's kind of jacked in this movie, too.
Yeah, he is.
Been working out a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
What else do we want to say before we dive into spoilers?
If there was one negative, I didn't like Daniel Kaluuya's character in this.
Yeah.
I think he was a little underwritten.
It kind of seems like there's more to it that was either cut or misinterpreted or something like that.
Well, there's something going on.
Flips pretty quick.
Yeah.
Towards like 2/3 of the way through.
Like there's a point where you're like, okay, he's the buddy of Black Panther and all that. And then I didn't quite catch him being so obsessed with killing the Andy Serkis character.
Yeah.
I didn't know that was his big like motivation in the movie until there's a point in the middle of it where, you know, he gets upset at Black Panther and everything. Mm-hmm. So it came out of nowhere for me, and maybe there was something in there that I missed it, and there's always that possibility. I didn't like him because they didn't really write him as a strong character as all the other ones mm-hmm. are and everything. And when he shows up, you're like, I'm like, oh yeah, that's Daniel Kaluuya. Yeah. And he just doesn't do anything.
Yeah.
Anyway. I really liked it. I thought the music was good.
Yeah. What about the music? Unfortunately, in the theater that Chris and I went to, the mix was low again. Now this is the same theater, not the same actual theater, the same building that we saw Last Jedi.
Should stop going there.
I know.
It's right down the street, though.
You could tell. I wish I was in a more immersive experience, because there were some times where you could feel like the doom, doom, doom to really set up the scene.
Yeah.
And I wanted that to be like bone rattling. Like, I wanted that to be like a real like punch in the gut. And it wasn't for us. It was still great music. You could hear it, but it was the mix.
Well, my mix was fine, but I still don't think it was bone rattling.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, what I enjoyed, I guess, was a break from the typical Marvel score.
Yeah.
And we get, you know, a soundtrack that I guess Kendrick Lamar mm-hmm. put together, curated, what have you.
I like the placement of that song you did with The Weeknd. I think it's
how much is Kendrick and how much is the composer Ludwig Göransson?
I don't know. I know that the soundtrack was top of the Billboard charts for a while.
The drums and all that seems more composery.
It is, because they introduced that theme when he came in Civil War.
Okay.
That kind of, it's not Wonder Woman-ish, but it's percussive.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, yeah.
But the soundtrack from top to bottom, the song you did with SZA, that soundtrack is good. It's it's lit. It's lit AF.
Lit AF.
Oh, goodness gracious.
All right.
should we talk spoilers?
So before
we do.
So we all liked it.
Yes.
Yeah, we'd all say go see it if you haven't. If you're somehow on the fence.
Well, okay, so how high is this going to go? If it's hitting somewhere around $200 million over the first 4 days, because it's a holiday weekend, technically, with President's Day, I mean, is this going to be one of the biggest grossing MCU films, do you think?
If it makes that kind of opening weekend, then yes.
Mm-hmm. It's right around there,
because
right?
The Avengers hit over $200 million, the first one. If it does that and it has the same kind of multipliers in play, and it probably won't, but the Avengers, remember, went on to make $600 million, mm-hmm. and it's still the number one MCU. And I think Iron Man 3 or one of those, I can't remember which one, Iron Man is up there in that $400 million echelon or whatever. I think even Age of Ultron was $400 or $500 million.
Yeah,
so
that was
those two. It might be one and two, and then you have one of the Iron Mans in there.
It's great.
So it's going to be up there. It's going to be in the top five.
This has everything working against it on paper, right? Like minority cast, February release, mm-hmm. Semi-obscure character, mm-hmm. First-time MCU director. And every time, not every time, but most of the time that they do this, they go outside of the box. You get an Iron Man. You get like Thor Ragnarok. You mm-hmm. get Guardians of the Galaxy. Mm-hmm. And I hope they don't screw it up.
I hope they don't, you know?
Yeah.
I liked it. I give it, I have to watch it again before I decide if it's an A-minus or a B-plus.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a solid A-minus or B-plus.
So, yeah, what you have is Marvel's The Avengers made $623 million, and it is opening with $207. That was for 3 days, I believe. Age of Ultron, $459 million, had $191 million opening. Iron Man 3, $409 million, $174 million opening. Yeah, unbelievable, right? Civil War is up there because it's essentially Avengers. And then Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2, $389.
So wow.
If Black Panther makes $210 million in 4 days, it's going to go past that, yeah. At least.
Yeah, yeah, that's
so
awesome.
So, yes, it will be in the top five.
Sweetness.
All right, go on to the spoilers.
We spoil it up.
Let's do it.
Kaiser Sose.
Luke's father is actually Darth Vader. She's the sister and the daughter.
She's they just No. I'm reading the books.
I still have no fucking clue who's stronger than who.
Mm.
Like at the end of this movie, his Praetorian Guard gals are basically fighting against Killmonger
mm-hmm.
while he's out in the field doing stuff. And I don't even understand how they should be able to keep up with him. In any measure, because
he's still on the juice, right?
He's on the juice, and he's got the suit. Mm-hmm. And between the suit and the juice, the vibranium and the extra powers, there should be nobody that could keep up with him,
right?
And then at the end of the movie, there are several mini battles where Lupita Nyong'o, is it Nyong'o?
It might Nyong'o. By the way, it might just be like Nyong'o, like that.
Nyong'o.
Yeah. So,
well, anyway. It's all right. I'm a stupid American.
Well, yeah. Somebody will correct us.
Yeah. Thank you for that in advance. She has a little mini fight, and who's stronger than who?
Yeah.
I don't understand it. And they definitely technobabble all over the vibranium in this movie, left and right. What it is, what it's capable of. It's basically anything they want to tell you it is.
Mm-hmm.
And that is a little frustrating. And goddamn the rhinos.
Yeah.
The rhinos is the point where I turned to my buddy and said, I was enjoying this movie.
Yeah.
Like, battle rhinos. Like,
well, let's talk about the CG in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
There are some bad parts.
Is the worst part of this movie, man.
There are times when it works. But
yeah, no, because I actually liked, I think, Chris, you mentioned when we were coming out that the challenge scenes.
Yeah.
Looked a little fake. It looked fake.
You can tell that they're in a green screen studio.
Well, and the people standing up on the cliff watching are not people.
What people, yeah, exactly. That's the thing about those crowd scenes is that I've gotten acutely aware, and maybe it's one of those things, it's an uncanny valley type thing or whatever, but whenever they put digital crowd characters in a movie, their movements give them away.
Yeah.
Like that, it's like maybe too much movement, mm-hmm. or
yeah, they should just stand the
or like, you know, if they're clapping or jumping, it's like at a different pace than what you're used to. That whole thing with the cliffside and all that, and surrounding this water, you're like, they're not there.
Mm-hmm.
That's just the way it feels the entire time. It detracts, and I hate to say that when we've got a movie that we really like here, it really does detract from your experience when you see that type of thing. Sure, there's some people out there who don't give a fuck, and fine, you're great people.
Mm-hmm.
But every time I see it, I'm just very acutely aware that they're not there.
Yeah.
So I don't know what the fix is. I don't think you should go out to the Congo and actually shoot, like, you know, shoot these movies or anything. I'm just saying that, you know, the digital representation always looks with, and especially with like a million waterfalls and all that shit.
Well, the problem with this is that there is some like super realism in this, where like they're shooting in the village and you see like the actual people interacting and everything and the culture and the vibrancy and stuff like that. It's like then when you superimpose that on these CG, you know, overarching effects, it feels less real because you've got this to kind of map onto.
Mm.
And so if they would have gotten a little bit more practical stuff in there, it would have been, you know, just a feast for the eyes. And it still is, but it's got that sheen to it.
Yeah, no.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Is this movie too predictable, or did I just have a really good day with predictions?
I think it's pretty predictable.
Yeah,
because the biggest one is obviously when Michael B. Jordan shows up and challenges him to fight for the throne. And I leaned over to my friend and I was like, so there's no way Chadwick Boseman wins this fight.
No.
Because narratively, you wouldn't have this fight exist if he wins it.
I'll tell you what I thought. I thought Clubber Lang. As soon as that showed up, I was like, "That's Rocky III. He's going to lose."
Yeah, exactly. Well, and see, if I almost think the movie could have been a little cooler if it had ended before Boseman has gotten back the throne. Like, I kind of almost expected them to have him decide, you know what, I need to go protect the world and the rest of my people who are out in the world and not stay so focused on, and maybe he'll get the throne back in the sequel or what have you, because it all happens a little quick.
Mm-hmm.
Where once he loses the throne, to where they find him and then he comes back, it's all a little quick.
It also becomes repetitive because we've already seen a fight to the death or whatever, like not to the death, but we've already seen a fight for the throne early on in the movie, and then we see another one later on, and it doesn't. It feels like we've been through this before, even though, like you said, we now know that, especially if you're just looking at your at the time that you're in the movie, there's no way he wins this.
Right.
There's also no way he dies, which is what they sit there and try to tell you forever. And you're like, come on, do we really have to waste our time with this? Can't he just, you know, I would actually like it if like just some like spirit god came down and said, no, you are not dead yet, and just threw him back up onto the but I understand it makes it cooler that, you know, they go to that other tribe and they have to get their help, and
I love
and
that scene.
That's a really good scene.
And that tribe, I was kind of annoyed with the whole, now we're not going to help you, and I literally said out loud, until the climactic moment of the final battle. Because there's no question that they're going to come help.
Yeah, I love that interaction though with Winston Duke's character, where he's hilarious, and it needed like a little bit of that, like irreverent humor and everything, and that great moment where Martin Freeman goes right into regular, like, authoritarian, just expositional speech, and he gets, and he's looking around, he's like, what the, oh, yes, sorry.
And goes, it's like, if you talk to me again, we'll eat you. And then he's like, oh, wait, we are vegetarians.
Well, and I do think, I was happy to see Martin Freeman finally get used by the MCU.
Mm-hmm.
I do think his character could have literally been any white person.
Yeah.
But it was nice to see him get used a little bit more. The stuff they gave him to do was fun. The movie's really funny.
But can I ask you this? Why did they bring him back to Wakanda? Okay. I understand that they have the vibranium that can fix anything, right? But they're in fucking South Korea.
Mm-hmm.
He gets shot in the spine. There's no Korean doctor around there that can probably.
I think that's what they're saying.
Save him.
Yeah, I think they are definitely saying he will die if he doesn't go there.
But they can immediately diagnose. I know. Movie. All right.
Well, I mean, they're talking about this. You know, they don't describe in detail how they know all.
No,
this
I
stuff.
Know, but he's not only, they've kept this Wakandan secret for how many hundreds of years?
Mm-hmm.
This is an age, like, they literally say this. Whoever it is, it's his sister, Letitia Wright, that says that he has to come. But I think it's Lupita Nyong'o that says, no, we can't bring him here because he's a fucking spy.
Yeah.
And this is like our closely guarded secret.
No, I think she's the one that's arguing to bring him because he saved her life.
Oh, is it the other way around?
In the casino fight.
Oh, okay.
He jumped in front of the bullet.
Mm.
That's another thing, though. I mean, I could bring up the fact that even if you've seen it, doesn't mean you could just go back and go inside once you've seen it inside.
Or find it again.
Like, that's what I'm saying. Like, they show at the beginning Chadwick Boseman and everybody like flying into this thing, and he's like, I never get tired of this.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like this basically just magic that they go through this force field or so. Yeah.
It's a cloaking device from the Klingons.
Right.
I do have some questions.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's a moment in the end, near the end, where Michael B. Jordan is getting ready to ship the weapons off, I guess, to people around the world. They talk mm-hmm. about having some war dogs out there. I don't know what that means.
Right.
But he literally says the line, this spear and such could stop a tank, and we have thousands of them. Why the hell is Wakanda building thousands of weapons like that? They're a hidden society. Who are they fighting?
I feel like they're stockpiling and kind of, you know, just in case. Because, I mean, they have tech, they have all kinds
Isn't at the very beginning they say that the world is getting closer to them and that they, like, the world is developing and the world outside is getting closer?
Okay, maybe
I
missed
eventually
that.
They are going to entreat on this secret society and everything. I think that's what they say somewhere at the beginning, yeah. is that the world is just, it's getting to the point where everything is expanding. Hmm. And at some point they're going to find this, you know, this wooded area that's out here, and when they do, we're going to have to be prepared because they're going to want all this stuff. They're going to want to attack us. All the countries of the world want all the stuff that we have. So I think that's the case.
Well, it would make sense for them to stockpile, you know, especially if they have this unlimited supply of vibranium and they're using it. They've got their technological needs met and everything. You know, they'd probably make some weapons just in case.
Okay. I will accept that explanation.
Did you stick around for the post-credit stuff?
No. I am never going to do that again, ever. I went home and read about him.
It's so weird because when we actually did stay, and I was asking Chris afterwards, I was like, how did Bucky get to Wakanda? Because, mm-hmm. you know, all this stuff just meshes together, and I kind of don't remember what happens, especially with post-credit sequences. And then we kind of, we went back and we were like, oh, yeah, the last scene of Civil War was of Bucky in Wakanda looking out over Wakanda, right? Mm. And then Chris was like, why did we need that again? Because that's the last end credit scenes here. It's literally Bucky waking up in Wakanda and coming out and looking over Wakanda with the people again.
It's the exact same thing. Why even bother?
Yeah. We've established. Like, this is like your prime real estate.
Well, isn't the other end credit scene him going to the UN or whatever?
Yeah, and it's perfectly fine. It's a timely message and everything, but it's completely unnecessary.
I was going to say, it's the same message we get from the final scene on the basketball court, mm-hmm. that he's going to open up Wakanda to the rest of the world.
Yeah.
And so both of those end credit scenes, if I had stayed for them, I would have been even more pissed. But no, I've drawn a line in the sand.
They're getting lazy. They're getting lazy with these end credit scenes. They know people want them, but now they just don't know what to tell people anymore, I guess.
Yeah.
Well, they didn't have any connection to the larger MCU besides a few rounds of dialogue and, of course, Martin Freeman's
game. Someone's going to get really upset that you just said that, Barry.
Yeah, exactly.
There's always somebody who comes up. I can't remember what discussion we were having in a main episode once, and we said that about the connection. I think it was Thor Ragnarok we were talking about. And we were trying to say that it didn't have much to do with the at-large story or whatever. But somebody came, the Hulk's in there? And, like, all these other things are in there? I'm like, yeah, that's not the point. God damn it. And whoever, you know, I know whoever that is listening. I'm not mad.
I'll tell you what. One thing, I'm not super excited about Infinity War. Mm-mm. When I see that trailer, I'm almost getting bored now. Same with the Han Solo trailer. Bore me with a spoon. Anyway, but one thing I do desperately want to see in Infinity War, and I hope to God they give it to us, is Tony Stark saying something snarky to the sister from Wakanda and her giving that shit right back. Because she don't take no guff.
Yeah.
And mm-hmm. she probably knows more than Tony does in terms of how to use vibranium, at least, or technological mm-hmm. advances. And so I hope there's at least one scene of banter between them where she gets to put Tony in his place.
Those characters certainly should be talking to each other.
I agree.
They're probably reshooting it right this second.
Yeah. Yes, they are. But they certainly should be talking to each other because of the, you know, the same realms of expertise and all that. One thing also in this movie that I was a little bit of a letdown was we get the little foreshadowing thing from her character where she says that the trains that are running on the tracks have those little, I guess, buffers or mm-hmm. whatever. I don't know what they're called or whatever, but it apparently takes away the vibranium's power.
Yeah.
So you know that there's going to be a fight there later on. That I felt like that wasn't paid off quite as much as I'd like. I know that they get in there and they lose the powers and everything, but I was hoping more for sort of an exploitation of that where one of them is in it and the other person is not.
Yeah.
I think they kind of do that, but not like to the point of where it's really, you know, someone's exploiting it or whatever.
Well, yeah, because they're both equal at that point.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, and again, we don't know really who's stronger in that situation.
Well, and by the way, again, we have same versus same
yep.
in a Marvel. Like yep. it's Black Panther versus Black Panther. It can't ever be like, you know, can it be like this guy's something different?
They've
maybe?
Been doing that since Iron Man.
Yeah.
And yeah, I don't disagree with you at all. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's like that's what's frustrating, I guess, is that I'm waiting for Marvel to give me a complete package.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering if it's ever going to happen. I really like Spider-Man Homecoming. I really like this movie. I'm going to watch them both many times. But every time I'm going to think some of the action is a mess. Some of the CG is a mess. And if I pop in The Dark Knight, there's never a point in that whole movie where I'm like, oh, that's terrible.
Huh? Yeah.
Why, the only part that comes close is that stupid cop in the truck who's like, that's not good. That's yeah. not good. That's the only part. So, you know, maybe this is the whole package for your MCU fans out there. Maybe they don't care about the action being cut like we do. Maybe they don't care about the CG in this and Thor Ragnarok that's bad like we do. I don't know. But, you know, I feel like I'm never going to be able to go above a B+ or an A-.
Yeah.
Frustrating.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I really, really liked this movie.
Man, I mean, the themes and the message of this movie, I think, are enough to override any, and there are several, like, issues that I have with it, you know, technically, the execution of it. But, I mean, to see the kind of response that it's getting, to see how much money it's making, to see kind of this, like, grassroots movement just... funny to say about a Marvel film,
yeah.
But it's a different type of it. It's a whole different market. It's a whole different thing.
I love that he has to, like, his arc is basically that he has to almost reject his father, or at least see the error in his ancestors' ways. You know what I'm saying?
Which is what their entire society is based on.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah,
worship.
Like the whole movie is about the rules, and it's about how we've always done this. And his arc is basically completed when he abandons all that. I thought that was pretty interesting.
I also don't know why he has to kill his brother, by the way. The king?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, he was trying to kill Forrest Whitaker's character, right?
Yeah, he was trying to shoot him.
But, I mean, he could just step in front of it. He's in the suit.
Well, yeah. And well, yeah.
You know, I mean, yes,
also,
I understand why he did, but
it's like, yeah. Also, why did he leave his claws in the guy's chest?
Yeah,
because Killmonger says, I found panther claws in my daddy's chest.
Yeah.
I'm like, why? Do they come off?
Yeah.
Like, what the fuck?
Right. Leaves all that evidence.
But yeah. He had so many good line readings, Michael B. Jordan, like at the very end when Black Panther shows back up and he's like giddy.
Yeah,
right, Killmonger is. He's like, "What's up?" He's so happy. And then at the very end, when he's been killed, he's like, "Nice shot," or whatever, "Nice move," or
yeah,
whatever.
Yeah,
well, there's that. And man, that last fucking line that he has, it's about like, tell that to the people that jumped off the boat because they would rather have a death by sea instead of a life in chains.
Mm-hmm.
Fuck, man.
Yeah,
that's a punch in the gut right there.
Well, and again, the movie's not shy about racial issues.
Yes.
The movie is kind of taking it head on, which I kind of appreciated and found a little refreshing. They're not trying to dance around it. Anyway, yeah, it's complicated.
Mm-hmm.
One of the reasons I think this movie's so good is that the characters are complex.
They're
given a lot of depth.
Yeah. In the end, I think what Barrett is trying to allude to here is that it, even with some of the same things we see in all the other Marvel movies and everything, just its overall, like, you know, championing of this cast and the way it was made and everything sort of sort of trumps all that,
yeah.
right? It's just, you know, I think we're more willing to forgive some things if you can give us something that we don't really ever see in mm-hmm. other movies.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the sort of the case here. Like, I'm willing to forgive some things here and there because this is so empowering.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And just like I said, just seeing this on Twitter and seeing how, you know, somebody randomly on Twitter was like, I want to see this movie every day for the rest of my life.
Well, I saw, I think it was on Reddit, somebody posted a picture of them and Michael B. Jordan and at the theater, because I guess he'd been in the back wearing a hoodie, just kind of checking out the audience reaction. But it was this guy's second time seeing the movie, and this was Friday night. It only came out Thursday night.
Yeah.
So that guy's already on his way to every day for the rest of his life.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, just goes to show how important that is. I mean, we had that sort of with Get Out at the same time last year and mm-hmm. everything. This time we have it in a mainstream type of – Get Out sort of became mainstream. But this one, like, right up front was mainstream. So, look, we're gonna put, you know, I mean, there's only, like, two white people in this entire movie.
Yeah. Yeah.
other than background extras or CG'd extras.
Yeah.
In the America scenes or what have you. But, yeah, there's only, like, two white dudes in the movie.
Exactly.
And it's not something that feels like you're not conscious of that watching the movie. Mm-mm. You're not like, where's all the white people at?
Yeah.
I'm gonna try not to make that the cold open.
Yeah, man.
So you come down on B plus A minus territory. Yeah. I come on firmly an A minus, bordering on an A. What do you think?
Yeah, I'm gonna put it A minus because I think for the most part I've been giving the average Marvel movie that entertains me with the terrible action scenes a B plus.
Mm-hmm.
But because this is so much different, I'm gonna give it that extra oomph on it.
Extra,
it's going to be
go see it.
Yeah. Yeah,
enjoy it.
Yeah,
then come under the comments and tell us on the
how to pronounce Lupita Nyong'o.
Yeah. All these names, really. I mean, you know, it's a constant struggle.
We just mastered French, for God's sake.
Yeah.
Now we're moving on.
Yeah,
to
yeah. We've mastered it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. There's no mispronunciation whatsoever.
I just went through the entire Rosetta Stone in the last week. All right. Well, we all enjoyed it. You need to go see it if you haven't. It's excellent. So that'll be it for this mini pod.
It's a mini pod.
Mini pod. Panty pod.
Of Black Panther. And yeah, keep going to Sincast presented by CinemaSins. Keep going to SoundCloud, our CinemaSins Twitter, and tell us what you thought and what you thought of this podcast. But this is Chris Atkins and Jeremy Scott and Barrett Sher. We'll see you next time.
Thanks for listening. Comment on our episodes on our SoundCloud page. Check us out on YouTube, Twitter, Facebook, and Reddit. And be sure to visit CinemaSins.com.
And see, there's a bunch of Dan Auerbach songs on Satellite 28, the Spectrum. I didn't know that that was the lead singer of that band until
Black Keys?
Google guy was bragging about it. The Dan Auerbach.
Oh, yeah, Google guy.
The Dan Auerbach stuff sounds nothing like the Black Keys.
Does it not?
Have you not heard any
of it?
I've
heard a little bit of it.
It sounds nothing like that.
That's hilarious. Yeah, I remember that guy.
Shine on me. Do, 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 do. Shine on me. Boop, 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 boop.
Featuring backing vocals by the mayor's economic advisor.
I don't really like that new song of his.
Oh, really? I'm all right with it.
It's just plodding.
Yeah, a little bit.
I remember not liking it very much when I heard it too.
Crimes and Misdemeanors, Pills and Potions. What is the name of it?
Captured by Love or Connected by Love.
So nothing.
Nothing like what you were saying. You will always be my whore.
It's playing at Regal Opry Mills Stadium about 60 times today. Between standard IMAX 3D, 3D RPX, and what is RPX? Oh, is that the immersive thing where like the...
No.
No.
It's like a rip-off IMAX.
Really?
Yeah.
So yeah, Regal bought IMAX and created this discount IMAX they call RPX. It's supposed to be better than regular, but it's technically not really IMAX.
It's, yeah. It's, yeah, the...
Just a way to charge you more money.
Yeah, they did that at Hollywood 27 with Auditorium 17, and they improved the sound, and they I don't know if they could even make the screen bigger because it was already huge. It's just a weird marketing ploy.
Yeah.
They tried to sell that as straight up IMAX for a while, and then people called them out.
I believe it was Aziz Ansari who called it Limax.
Yes.
Oh,
yes.
Really?
Yes.